So let's continue on looking at the sutta. And first thing I want to say is you may have noticed in the last week, as you were all, of course, doing your homework and practicing every day, that there's a lot more going on than just the breath. If you start noticing what's going on, the breath is like, well, yeah, the breath is always there, but all this other stuff is going on. And so we want to expand what we can note into a larger arena of the whole body and all the different things that experiences the body might have. I want to start by reading once again from the sutta, and I want to read the next two sections on mindfulness of body. So this section is called the Four Postures. Again, bhikkhus, when walking, a bhikkhu understands, I am walking. When standing, he understands, I am standing. When sitting, he understands, I am sitting. When lying down, he understands, I am lying down. Or he understands accordingly, however his body is disposed. So this has two really interesting implications, this verse. One is that, you know, we think of meditation as something we do sitting. It's like, you know, let's go sit, right? But actually, you can do this practice in any way. I've spent time practicing standing, for instance, which is quite interesting to practice standing, because you get a sense, a much stronger sense of body than sitting sometimes. And it's pretty hard to fall asleep. So if you're ever sleepy, standing is a really great antidote to sleepiness, if you're having problems with your practice. You can also practice lying down. That's what you're saying, sitting, walking, standing, seated, lying down. Lying down, I've worked with this too, more when I haven't been feeling well, or I was having some, at one point a long time ago, I had some back issues and I had to lie still, but I still wanted to meditate, so I just practiced lying down. So there's lots of, it's okay if that's where your body energy is. The trick is not to fall asleep when you're practicing lying down, but it's okay to practice lying down. And also it says walking, which is like, oh wait, I could actually be moving. And there's a whole form of walking practice. I'm not going to say more than that about it right now, but there are forms of, very traditional forms of mindfulness practice that are done walking in motion, as opposed to in a still position, standing, seated, or lying down. And then, of course, he says, this is the typical Buddhist trick, accordingly, wherever his body is disposed, and which is like, or any other place where you might have settled, you know, half sitting, half standing, squatting, who knows, right? The other implication of this verse, however, is also very important, I think, and we often forget this, because really what this verse is saying is there's no time when you can't be practicing. Because when are you not walking, seated, standing, lying down, or some other body position? So sort of, it's Buddhist code for all the time. You know, you can always be practicing mindfulness. It's not like you just do it when you're sitting, and then there's the rest of my life. Okay. Then in the next verse, again, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu is one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, going out into the world, coming back from the world, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food, and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when waking, walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. So there's no act that isn't, that's not suitable. You know, it's all, we could note any of these things. We could pay attention to all of them. We could be mindful in any situation, no matter what we're doing. Mindfulness of eating is one thing that's really quite interesting. If you ever want to have a mindful meal, you know, make sure your radio's off and your phone's put away and you're not looking at the computer and you're not talking to anybody. And just see, pay attention to what's actually happening when you eat. The incredible amount of sensation involved in eating a small, even just a small amount of food. I mean, the traditional thing in the Vipassana world is to give everybody one raisin. All right, now eat this raisin and be really aware what's happening and see all the sensations just in eating one raisin. Try that sometime if you want. It's like, oh, look at what goes on, just that one little raisin. Anyhow, so this, the implication here is that, once again, mindfulness isn't something that just we do, we have this formal sitting practice, and then there's the rest of my life. Mindfulness is something you can practice all the time. When you're on retreat, this is probably the thing you'll hear more than anything else when you're on retreat, is that the teachers will be saying things like, keep your practice continuous. In other words, yes, there's the time you're sitting, but then there's like, you got to eat meals, you got to take a shower, you got to help do the dishes. You can be mindful all the time. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Really, it doesn't matter at all. And the other thing that's interesting is, if you look at this, this list of what the Buddha said we could pay attention to, all the senses have come into play. It's now not just, you know, tactile breath attention. It's like the whole body is something we can use as a something to pay attention to. Which leads to another interesting implication. And I want to read something here. Oops, wrong book. This is called the Samyutta Nikaya. Samyutta means connected. And these are like collections of collected discourses about a particular topic that the Buddha talked about. And this is the book of the six senses. And this particular verse is quite famous. This is Bhikkhus, I will teach you the all. Listen, in what, Bhikkhus, is the all? The eye informs, the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and tastes, the body and tactile objects, physical sensations, the mind and mental phenomena. This is called the all. If anyone, Bhikkhus, should speak thus, having rejected this all, I shall make known another all, that would be a mere boast on his part. If he were questioned, he would not be able to reply, and further, he would meet with vexation. For what reason? Because that would not be within his domain. What he's saying here is, actually, if you're starting to pay attention to everything that's going on, without exception, there's really only at the simplest level, one of six things. That's one of what we'll call one of six sense doors has caught your attention. So it could be you hear something, you smell something, you taste something, you see something, you feel something like a body sensation of some sort, or something, some mental formation, something arises at the level of mind. So if we want to start paying attention to everything, literally everything, we can, at the simplest level of noting, just note the sense door. You hear something that catches your attention, you note hearing. Seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. Oh, I think we already had thinking, right? So, and notice here that what we've been doing in terms of paying attention to the breath is just a subset, in a sense, of the feeling note, because what we were doing is paying attention to the sensations of breath, the physical thing. So the breath was a special case, that we chose because it was so convenient. So now what do we do? We go, oh my God, look at all the stuff I have to pay attention to. How do we choose? This is the important thing. How do we choose what to note? This is the key to the practice at this expanded level. And basically what you want to do is at any particular moment in time, you note what's most obvious, what catches your attention. So maybe there's a loud noise, then you'd note hearing. But then you wait 3 or 4 seconds, and then what's catching my attention now? And you note that. So the mind, you're noting, you're paying attention to whatever catches your attention the strongest, whatever that happens to be. And there's nothing that's like, oh, I shouldn't note this, I shouldn't note that. And there's no good and bad. There's no judgment of what you're noting. It's just you're noting what's arising. Remember when we talked about last week, we said what we're trying to do is just pay attention to what's happening right now. There's no possible way you could note everything that's happening at these 6 sense doors. You have about 20 sense impressions a second. So to try and note them all would just make you crazy really quickly. So instead, you have this method that I just described. What's catching my attention now? That's what you note. Without judging it or questioning it or thinking, oh, I shouldn't note that, or I should be noting this again because it was really cool. Just every 3 or 4 seconds in this sort of rhythm, you note what sticks up out of the, you know, it's like the spike on the graph. Well, that's nice. But of course, the interesting thing about sensations is the vast majority of those sense impressions we get every 20 a second are pretty bland, what are called neutral. They don't stand out at all. They're just sort of there. And there are certainly going to be periods in your practice where nothing stands out, where it's all this sort of, it's sort of bland. There's nothing that stands out that makes it. And so if we're not careful, we start looking for something to note. Oh, I should be noting something, right? Instead, you just go back to the breath. How convenient. The breath is always there. So I can always, if there's nothing grabbing my attention, nothing's jumping out at me, then I simply have this anchor. The breath is the anchor to the practice. And we just go back to the anchor and we note the breath until something else jumps up and grabs our attention. And then we note that. So there's this sort of, this is where skill starts to arise in the practice. You know, you start to recognize, oh, nothing going on. Oh, yeah, there's an inhale. So, and you just shift carefully back and forth from one of these to the other. It's this sort of more open space of, well, what's going on? Really, that's right. What's going on now? What's arising at my sense doors that's catching my attention? I'll note that. And then there's nothing's going on. I'll go back to the breath. And this takes some skill. It takes some, you know, you practice and you learn when to make that choice. Yeah. There's several more things here. For instance, this what we're talking about here is passive senses. By that I mean we're hearing, not listening. Listening is this outgoing energy of trying to hear something. Hearing is just, I heard something. It's a passive process. We're not trying to make anything happen at all. We're not trying to, specialize. We're just being this passive receptor mode, taking things in as they arise and noting them, whatever's the most strong. Or, as I said, when there's nothing strong, then we go back to paying attention to the breath, that convenient anchor we have. Now, just as in breath, remember with breath we had, just in, out, or inhale, exhale, rising, falling. But sometimes there was some quality of the breath that we noticed, that was strong enough that we noticed it. A deep breath, a short breath, a long breath, a shaky breath, who knows? And we would use that note, because noting in that way essentially pulls us a little tighter to what's actually happening. It tethers us a little bit more tightly. Same thing here, only now, wow, look at all the things we could possibly note. So for instance, you could notice, you just had supper, you're sitting there quietly just meditating, and you notice some taste in the mouth, it's sort of a residue of the meal you just had. And you might just note tasting, and that might be a perfectly valid note, but maybe the taste has a certain quality. Could be salty, spicy, sweet, hot, sour, all those words we use to describe taste. If that pops out, then that would be your note for that particular sensation. Same with hearing, loud, soft, buzzy, rattly, lots of different words for words we can use to describe sound. Now I'm raising the yellow caution flag here. We have to be very careful with this, because if we're not careful, we start thinking, oh, I should be noting the quality. And as soon as you hear that should in your mind, it's like, oops, no shoulds here. So if the quality jumps out at you, if it's obvious, like you don't go looking for a word to describe, because you've got a word, taste, tasting, smelling, hearing, feeling, seeing. You have those words readily available. So these other notes we would use when they're obvious, when they, it's like you start to note something and it's right away, it's clear, oh, sour, or whatever that sensation happens to be. You use that note, that form of noting, when it's obvious, when it jumps out at you. You don't go looking for it. The other thing is, we have to be careful when we're noting in this sort of much broader sense. For instance, we're sitting here, and maybe you live in a place where you hear the traffic and a particularly loud car goes by, and that gets your attention. The note might be hearing, might be loud because it's a loud car, but it's not hearing a car. Too much content. The noting doesn't have content. We're not trying to figure out what we're hearing or smelling or tasting or seeing. We're just noting that that's actually what's happening right now. So the danger of content is that you start to get caught up in hearing a car go by. Gee, sounded like my old 67 VW. I wonder if I remember the time, blah, blah, and there's your mind off running away. We've let ourselves get caught by that sound. It's drawn us into thinking about it, and now it evokes a memory, and then we're caught in spinning around in the memory, and now we're not paying attention to the present moment at all anymore. And of course, we then remember, we know thinking, and we go back to the actual practice. For now, in terms of what's arising at the mental level, mental formations, let's just, for now, stick with thinking as the only note for those. Obviously, the last half of this course is going to be talking about how we can expand that beyond just the word thinking. But I want you to really tune into body sensation, into the first foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of body. Mindfulness of the body is going to be really helpful as we go deeper into the practice. So I want you to really practice on just paying attention at that level. One more thing. See, there's a lot here. That's as you open up this way, especially if you've never done this before, or maybe you've done it 1,000 times, but today is one of those days when it just things aren't going so well, like you're grumpy or extra tired or who knows. It's often okay to go, you know, this is really open note, everything that's arising, picking whatever, it's just too much. It's exhausting me just trying to do this. It's always okay just to go back to the breath, that simple practice we did last week and we did earlier on this evening, and just say, I think I'll just hang out with the breath for a while. And remember what I said, breath, just having just breath as the meditation object and nothing else is a way to increase your concentration. And so maybe if you're feeling kind of scattered, having trouble paying attention, whatever, just stepping back and saying, okay, just the breath for now. Some people say, by the way, breath and sound. Sound is another thing that's always there. Unless you're in like one of these special rooms, you know, where they're shutting off all the sound, but pretty much always. And even then, there's always internal sounds that in the body that are going on, like, you know, things, people hear things and they gurgling and all kinds of things are going on in the body all the time. So there's always sound. So some people step back, but breath is too simple. So they have breath and if a sound catches them, they'll note the sound. And then they'll go back to breath. So you can go back to some much simpler form of practice. Hang out there for a while. And then say, okay, now let's open up and see if we can once again note everything that's arising. And doing that business of, okay, this particular thing is what's sticking out right now. I'll note that. Here, one last thing. There's one last yellow flag warning. The tendency, and I've seen this in myself many times, is to you note something and then you get caught in, oh, now I've got to find the next thing to note. So you go looking for something. You know, we're not looking for anything. We're noting, and then it's like da 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 noting, da 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 noting, and whatever is there is what you note. It's like we have this tendency to want to be ready for the next note. And you don't want to do that. That's because now you're leaning forward into the future. You're not in the present moment at all. You're 3 or 4 seconds ahead looking for what's next. It's that subtle, but it's really important because it's a tendency with this practice that you'll develop if you're not careful. That we just sort of want to leap ahead to the next one. As opposed to just being there, watching things go by. Ah, that's 3 or 4 seconds in time to note again and noting what's most predominant at that point. And then pause, note, pause, note. It's a you get a rhythm going to this. But the rhythm is what's happening right now without trying to find what I should be noting next. It'll don't try and find the note will find you, I guess is what I'm saying. It's like it's once again, this is a practice that you have to develop. It takes a little bit of skill and a little bit of practice. And this is one of the places where people often get caught not really, they think they're noting, but actually they're thinking all the time about what they're going to note next. that's something very different than what we're trying to accomplish. No, we're just trying to stay in the present moment, what's happening right now. Nothing else is important. Right. So that's all I have to say, but I suspect there might be, if there are, questions out there. So if you have any questions about anything I've just said, how this practice is going to go before, because we're going to take about a 30-minute practice session now and try to practice this. Now is the time to ask questions about all the stuff I just dumped on you. What do I do now? Ted is waving. Go ahead. Do you want me to unmute you, Ted? Okay. Go ahead, Ted.
I'm just, oops, wait. My wife's making an echo here. I'm just having this big question because you're talking about listening. And when I'm listening to you, I'm hearing words and the words have meanings and it's driving me crazy trying to distinguish sound from thinking in words.
Yeah, well, that's because you weren't in a different mode. I mean, when we're listening to someone else or reading a book or something like that, we're in a different, literally a different part of our brain is active. So when you're listening to me, it's pretty hard to be totally mindful. You can be moderately mindful. You can be aware of your body position while you're listening to me, for instance, but you can't try and break it down that much. You have to, use that part of your mind that distinguishes language and uses language, which is a very different part of the brain than is activated by mindfulness in its simplest form. Does that make sense?
Kind of, but I try to hear your words in a different sounds.
Yeah,
know what you're saying.
You're trying to be too subtle, Ted. just when you're speaking, when we're reading, when we're talking, it's literally a different process going on than the mental process that goes on when we're silent and not taking in words. It's a different, literally a different part of the brain is activated by this. So
have we ever talk about that, about what it is when you're listening to people talking?
Well, when you're listening to people talking, you're still using that same part of the brain.
Right, but how do you be mindful of that?
Ah, we may get to that at some point. I'm not going to, the main instruction about mindful listening, I think, which is what you're asking me about. The main instruction of mindful listening is to stay very centered in your body. We can, when we're listening, to get caught up in our minds, totally out of our bodies, essentially, figuring out what we're going to say next in response to what they're talking about. And now we're not in the present moment. We're not paying attention to them. We're noodling about, wow, what great thing I have to say next and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's part of conversation. And so mindful listening basically revolves around not thinking about your response, just really heart open, mind open, taking in what they're saying and staying really grounded in your body, not getting floating off into your head. So like literally, you know, planting your feet, making sure your hands are resting on your thighs or however it is you sit, like sit in a way that allows you to sort of be very aware of the body, that you're not drifting off into your head. Then you can be more mindful listening.
I guess that's why I had to ask you the question, because otherwise I was drifting off into what I was wanted to ask about.
Yeah, that's the opposite of mindful listening. And it's difficult because we're so, our whole culture is based on that conversational mode of, you know, they're saying something and I have to say something back, and what am I going to say? And, you know, the pressure's on, and we're trying to, when you're on the, in retreat mode, I've seen some teachers strongly suggest that you sit just like you were sitting in meditation with your eyes closed and just listen. That also can help. Some people find if they close their eyes while they're listening to a Dharma talk or anything of that nature, it helps them stay focused on just listening. Hopefully that's answered your question.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna mute you again here. Anyone else have any questions about what the instructions were here? Okay, in that case, let's just practice. So, as I've, you know, the same instructions as before, we want to find that comfortable upright position. We want to, you know, make sure we're grounded. Do people need a break? Do people want to take like a 2-minute break? I'm just, let me know. If not, then we're okay. Then you just want to settle into your seat. Feel like that sense of being grounded, that sense of lifting the heart. Sometimes I like to take a few deep breaths just to sort of, because that energizes me and wakes me up. So I consciously take a few deep breaths just to, you know, give myself a little juice. And then we're just going to sit. Those of you who are listening to this as a recording, at this point, I'm going to turn off the mic and stop the recording. And you should pause the recording. And then about after you're finished sitting, turn the recording back on. And you'll hear the continuing part of this lesson. So let's just sit. So let's talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about what just happened and then leave some time for you to share, comment, speak, ask questions. Here's the central problem of this practice. And that's that one of the main ways we try to be happy, how we try and create happiness in our lives, is through sense impressions. And that becomes more obvious when we're sitting, when we're being mindful. Because here's the basic thing that happens. When something pleasant arises, whether it's just I'm sitting there and I taste a little bit of that coconut ice cream I had for dinner, and I like that taste, and sure enough, then maybe I can taste a little bit more of that. The mind grasps it, wants more, wants it to continue because it's pleasant. We want to keep it and we want to have more of it, which pulls us out of the present moment. Or when something is unpleasant, we want to ignore it. We want to push it away. We only want pleasant experiences because we think somehow that pleasant experiences are what's going to make us happy. And so we're caught in this tug of war all the time, wanting to only have pleasant experiences and not have any unpleasant experiences. Which obviously to begin with, when we think about it for more than 2 seconds, isn't very realistic. It just isn't, life isn't that way, you know. And we think, here's the real the pearl, he'll realize you. We think somehow that we should be in control, that we should somehow have control of this process so that we can control the world such that we only have pleasant experiences. This is totally delusional. Basically, number one, we have almost no control at all over what's arising at the sense doors. Stuff just happens. You know, it's an example. You're just walking down the street, casually walking down the street, and someone walks by you and they're wearing a scent. Maybe it's the soap they use or the cologne or the aftershave or whatever. And it's like, and you smell that smell. This is a totally random experience, right? But then the mind gets caught up in, because you remember this other person who you really liked or really didn't like, a blah, 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 who smelt like that. So it's a totally random thing, just this smell as you're walking by down the street, and the mind goes swoosh, and it's gone into all these stories and blah, 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 and you're totally out of the present moment. Just like that, totally random. But what I'm saying is basically everything is like that, including what arises in your mind. We think somehow we should be able to at least control what's arising in my mind. What we're trying to learn to do with this practice is to, number one, give up the illusion that we have any control at all. And number two, to then learn to skillfully be able to be okay with whatever arises, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. Neutral can be, if you have, you know, you have one of those days where everything's neutral all day long, blah. Like we go out looking for, let's get some excitement here, you know? So, but that's just the way things are. Things just arise and we experience them. We have, you know, what Buddhists call causes and conditions are such that something arises. You know, this person just happened to be walking by while you were walking down the street, totally innocently, being mindful of, you know, how beautiful a day it was, and then you're gone. Just like that. Unpleasant or pleasant, you're caught. We are unhappy. I mean, really, on one level, this whole practice is about learning how to be happy in a different way. How's that for a broad statement? Huh? We're learning how to be happy in a totally different way. Instead of being happy through sense impressions. And by the way, I don't want in any way say having pleasant sense impressions is bad or wrong. You know, boy, that coconut ice cream was really good at dinner, right? And that's okay, as long as I don't think that that's going to make me happy permanently. It isn't. In the moment, really pleasant. But we're unhappy because no matter how hard we try, we can't succeed in controlling what's arising. This is called unsatisfactoriness. It's called one of the three poisons. It's like life is unsatisfactory as a way that the day-to-day experience of life is unsatisfactory in terms of a way to make ourselves happy in a deep, long-lasting sense. Lots of momentary happiness. Wouldn't deny that for a second. Lots of wonderful body sensations and mental sensations and sights and sounds and smells. Absolutely. But they don't last because everything's always changing all the time. This is the other central teaching of the Buddha, is that everything is impermanent. And it's when we try and hold on to something and make it permanent, whether it's that pleasant taste of coconut ice cream or that person I'm madly in love with, or anything else, that job, that house, whatever. It doesn't work because it's going to change. It is absolutely guaranteed to change. It's going to be impermanent. And that, so it's unsatisfactory because it's impermanent in a sense. We can't ever hold on to anything. We can't, like we somehow think, if I just construct this life where all these things are all lined up in some sort of perfect ducks in a row sort of way, so I got everything I possibly could want and I got it all together somehow, then I'll be happy. And we might even have a moment or two in a lifetime when that actually happens. There's times when it's like, oh, things just are so going so great, right? But then something changes. You know, all of a sudden, there's this virus that's sweeping the nation and changing your life completely. None of us had any control over that. It just happened. Or. That person walked by who was wearing that cologne of that friend of yours. It's just, and the mind changes. So then what we're trying to do through this mindfulness of body practice that I've been discussing is learn how to skillfully just be with whatever's there. And it might be pleasant, it might be unpleasant. And we, whatever it is, we always have to be able to just say, that's okay. That's what's happening right now, and that's okay. It's not like I want to change it or hold on to it or push it away, which is our normal reactive patterns of mind and body. You know, I have an itch. I want to scratch it. Like I'm sitting here and I know itchy. And the urge is, of course, is to go and scratch it, right? But if I'm sitting, I don't want to do that. I want to be able to just note the itching and note maybe notice how unpleasant it is. But that's just itch. It's just a body sensation. It's okay. Because if I pay attention to it a little bit, I'll notice it goes away anyway. Nothing's permanent, even that itch. Even that tight spot on your left thigh from sitting on that chair all this time or whatever. It all changes. It all goes away. Guaranteed. It's impermanent. And so what this practice is about, and on one level, is allowing us to actually see that this is true. We actually start to experience the unsatisfactory nature of sense experiences as a way to make us really happy. And how everything is changing all the time. And when the mind gets still and starts to notice that, that's when those moments of enlightenment arise. When we actually see that as not just an intellectual idea, but as something that's really true. Yeah, I experience that. I want to read this poem called Mindful by Mary Oliver. And I like this poem for two reasons that I'll explain later. I want to just read the poem first. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It is what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these. The untrimmable light of the world, the oceans shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. This is a wonderful description of mindfulness practice. Two things I want to point out. She says here, she wants to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation.
That's what this practice is about too. This practice is about feeling joy and literally letting it out. Acclamation is like expressing that joy to the world. Letting the world feel your joy. That's how the world changes. By feeling joy flowing out of people. As opposed to what often we see these days flowing out of people. We need lots more joy and acclamation. And the other thing I like with this is that it's not the extravagant, but the ordinary. It's like one of the dangers of this practice is that we make it into a big deal. This is just life. This is just this simple way of shifting our perception of how to live our lives by paying attention. That's all it is. It's very simple in its idea. In its practice, of course, we have to learn how to do it. Like, you know, just like if you want to learn how to play, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, well, you're going to have to practice a little bit to get that good. Yeah, and so we're all playing chopsticks right now, but that's fine. We're sort of figuring this out as we go along. And that's the nature of this beast, in a sense, is that we have to practice. So that's, of course, the last thing I have to say. Your homework is your daily practice. Find that time to practice every day, even if it's just for 10 minutes. Remember what I said last time, same time, same place. That's great. And then for a specific period of time, don't just think, oh, I'll sit for a while. Think, I'm going to sit for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, however, whatever works for you. And then stick to that. Otherwise, it's like, oh, I think I'll just blow it off. It's so tempting to sit for 3 minutes and then say, oh, that's enough for today. Give yourself a particular amount of time where you're going to sit. Lisa, are you flashing me? Your looks like you want to. No, not me, boy. Okay, because your mic was on. That's all. So then let's just dedicate the merit. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere. Thank you all for coming and for your kind attention.